Okay. You all can be seated. Just relax body and mind, huh? Before we start the puja chanting. So today is the first time we offer durian, which is a good offering symbol, where it's a fruit. Yeah? So all of us, when we develop the cultivation, the main aim is to realize the path and fruition. So this fruit, when you offer, it will create a good condition for path and fruition to occur. So we really should thank Yun Chan and Raymond for bringing us so much durian today. I was told a lot. So you will have a lot of very nice durian. Hopefully you take the fruit, you realize the friction too. And it's possible, no problem during this sasana. Also, today is 20th August 2019. So it's Tuesday class. We are having our puja now. Let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya. And mindfully, we shall proceed with the puja chanting. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Bổn Sư Thích Ca Mâu Ni Phật. Namo Quan Sư Hình Bồ Tát. Namo Quan Sư Hình Bồ Tát. Namo Quan Sư Hình Bồ Tát. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Amitabha. Namo Bhūṣaṁ Bhūṣa. Namo Bhūṣaṁ Bhūṣa. Namo Bhūṣaṁ Bhūṣa. Namo Dīcāng Huāng Bhūṣa. Namo Dīcāng Huāng Bhūṣa. Namo Dīcāng Huāng Bhūṣa. Namo Phổ Bồ Tát. Namo Phổ Bồ Tát. Namo Phổ Bồ Tát. Arahaṁ Sammā Sambuddho Bhagavā. Buddhaṁ Bhagavantaṁ Abhivādhemi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakassangho Sanghaṁ Namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Just relax body and mind. Maintain attentiveness. Then turn to page 1 of the chanting book. We will chant the Vandana onwards.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Buddhaṁ Saraṇaṁ Gacchāmi. Dhammaṁ Saraṇaṁ Gacchāmi. Sanghaṁ Saraṇaṁ Gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Buddhaṁ Saraṇaṁ Gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Dhammaṁ Saraṇaṁ Gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Sanghaṁ Saraṇaṁ Gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Buddhaṁ Saraṇaṁ Gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Dhammaṁ Saraṇaṁ Gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Sanghaṁ Saraṇaṁ Gacchāmi. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Kamesu micacara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Musawada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Suramiraya majapamadatana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami
Now we will chant the Padipa Puja offering of light.
Ganna sarappa ditena Dittena tamadangsina Diloka dipang sambudang Pujayami tamonudang Ganda sambarayutena Dopenahang suganghina Pujaye pujaniyang tang Puja bhajana muttamang Vanna ganda guno petang Etang kusuma santatin Pujayami munindasa Siri pada sarorohe Pujemi buddhang kusumena nena Punnena chitrena cha hotu mokhang Pupang milayati yata idang me Kayo tata yati vinasa bhavang Adivase tunobante Paniyang parika pitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang Adivase tunobante Pale parika pitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang Adivase tunobante Bojanang parika pitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang
Now we will chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will all diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration.
By the power of all these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculty of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas of power, then sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect, Triple J. Bedang Pajami. Damang Pajami. Sanghang Pajami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then just relax body and mind, view of the light, and you can have half an hour of meditation. This meditation is very simple. We call it the silent awareness meditation. You just have to relax your mind, silent everything, then maintain awareness. To be aware means just aware, without thought, without thinking. Just let the mind be. If the mind has thought, let the thought arise. No need to do anything. By being aware to observe without thinking, the mind will cease, the mind will become quiet. Then you will experience the peace within, the silence within. Then later on, when it becomes completely silent, you will realize your silent mind, which is part of your true mind. Then you are without thought, no more thinking. That is in fact your true mind, which is just aware. So meditation is to just relax the body and mind. Relax means do not go and create stress or problem. But most people don't know how to relax because they have a very busy day. They are very stressed up. So if you don't know how to relax, you tend to have a lot of tension, tightness, and stress within your physical body. Especially your facial expression. When you are not happy, when you are stressed because of job or career or responsibility or problem in life. So all this will make your facial expression very tense. You will have a lot of tightness, tension within your body. Then you find that they are not relaxed. When they are not relaxed, they create a lot of resistance. So your chi cannot flow. Then there is a lot of thinking going on. Because when you are not relaxed, it means you have problems. When you have problem, your thought will be very active. The heedless thinking continuously arise. That's why you cannot meditate. And the Buddha called this the mental hindrance. You have this mental hindrance, which are mental states that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness and inner awareness. So today's meditation is very simple. I will teach you how to relax. Just relax body and mind completely. No need to worry about anything. If the thought wants you to recall something, or if the thought comes from you, to recall the problems that you have not resolved, you tell the thought, please do not disturb me. I want to develop the meditation over the next half an hour. I will attend to it after the class. Mm. Then as you do that, every time the thought comes, just tell the thought, wait, after the session over, I will deal with them. Have mercy on me. Yeah? Do not disturb me anymore. I want to meditate. Mm. Then what you need to do is, make sure you have a stable posture. Yeah? You can cross your leg, or even sit on a stool or a chair. Whatever posture that is comfortable for you to meditate. The next thing is just to relax. Relax body and mind. Feel yourself soothingly relaxed, completely relaxed. Mm. Then after that, straighten your back. Make sure your backbone is quite straight, eh? But not too stiff. Relax, but posture with the backbone quite straight. Then close your eyes. Then just feel, don't think, feel. Feel, feel your forehead. If you can detect any tension or any tightness or any stress within, you just feel it soothingly, relax. Relax, relax and relax. Huh? You can verbalize quietly. Huh? Relax, relax. And, but you must feel it. Your forehead, all the muscle that are in the state of relaxed awareness. When you just relax and maintain that feel, the feeling, you will decondition your heedless thinking. When you feel, you cannot think. You feel and relax, feel and relax. Then you sweep your mind down to your eye muscle. Again, feel, relax. Feel your eye muscle soothingly relax. Then you move it down to your facial muscle, do the same. Feel, relax. Every part of your facial muscle, just feel, relax. Then in order to help you to relax further, you visualize yourself radiating a radiant smile. Eh? It can be in front of a mirror or whatever. Eh? Visualize yourself radiating a radiant smile. When you can genuinely smile, your mind is free. There is no tension, no tightness. Because when you are able to smile, you have joy. When there is joy, you feel relaxed, naturally relaxed. Mm. So radiating a radiant smile is very good. Mm. Then you recite, follow what I recite, yeah? To develop the inner well-being. To radiate love and metta, starting with yourself, then later, extend it to all beings. Mm. May I, this body and mind of mine, you must feel the body and your mind, be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within your entire physical body and mind. You can repeat, may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. May its mind states to be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May this body and mind of mine too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. Feel it. No more physical suffering, no more mental suffering. May it too be free from all harm and danger. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within our hearts. Mm. Then we will extend this metta or loving kindness thought, loving thought, to our loved ones. May all our loved ones, our parents, our brothers and sisters, our good friends and colleagues, people whom we have affection for, including our children and all those who have affinity with us. May all our loved ones to be well and happy. If you want, you can visualize them and radiate this well-being and love to them. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May their body and mind too be free from all harm and suffering, free from all physical and mental suffering. May they too be free from all harm and danger. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within the hearts. Then we extend this metta. May all beings within this vicinity of SS2, including all the non-humans, Dhamma protectors, and all Dhamma friends who are meditating together with us, may they all too be well and happy. May they all too be free from all harm and danger. May their body and mind too be free of all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we extend this metta to all beings within the whole of Patalingjaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, and our planet, the Mother Earth. Then all beings within our solar system, within our galaxy, within our Milky Way, extending to all beings within the entire universe. May they all too be well and happy, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you come back to your facial muscle, feel relaxed. Then you move your attention down to your neck, feel relaxed. Shoulder, feel relaxed. Hand, feel relaxed. Then you move it back to your shoulder. Then you move your mind, sweep it down to your heart, your chest area. Silence everything and just feel. You can detect whatever vibration or your heartbeat, stay there, silence everything. If you are new, if you are not sensitive, then just feel. Like you feel your forehead feel. Relax into all mind state that arise. If there is any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you just feel it soothingly. Relax, relax and relax. Then you move your attention down to your abdomen. Feel. Relax. Same for your stomach. Feel. Relax. Then your leg. Feel. Relax. Then you shift your attention now to your buttock. Again, feel, relax. Then you can reverse the whole of this mind sweeping method. You feel, every time feel and relax, no more thinking. You feel your buttock, relax. Leg, feel, relax. Then move your attention up to your abdomen. Silence everything, feel. Relax. Then your stomach. Feel. Relax. Then move it to your heart area. Again, feel, relax. Silent everything. You can detect your heartbeat or whatever vibration. You can just stay there. Maintain awareness until the mind becomes very, very quiet. If you are new, then you continue to sweep it out. Do your shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder, feel, relax. Then your neck, feel, relax. Then you sweep it out to your facial muscle, feel, relax. Yeah. Then your forehead, feel, relax. Including your eye muscle, feel, relax. By now, your mind should be quite calm, quite peaceful, silent. You have to maintain this inner peace, inner well-being and silence within. To do it, I will teach you another technique called Anapanasati. Anapanasati is called mindfulness of in and out breath. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So Anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. So just like how you feel your forehead, now you maintain attention at your nostril, feel your breathing, and follow the instruction of the Buddha. The Buddha says when you can detect your breath, breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. Initially, if you are not familiar, you have not trained, then you realize it's not easy to do. We are within split second, the mindfulness is gone. Your mind is lost in thought very fast. You are not mindful of the in and out breath. But never mind. As long as you have that intention to be mindful of the in and out breath, every time the mind wanders off, you just bring it back, patiently bring it back to the breathing and train. If you are patient enough, not long, within 5-10 minutes, it will stabilize. Then your mind will become very quiet, very peaceful. When you are mindful, means the mind and the breath move as one without thought. The mind is aware of the in and out breath, that's it. After you have stabilized this training, you will experience a type of inner peace which the Buddha called piti. Piti is a spiritual calmness, spiritual peacefulness of mind. Sometimes you can develop the spiritual joy within. They call it the spiritual calmness. Or some people call it a rapture. Spiritual rapture is like very, very nice because it's calm. It like create a very nice feeling within, like the mind is in rapture. Then when this happens, you continue to relax and silence everything. Then just allow the anapanasati, the mindfulness of the in and out breath, to move on its own pace. Do not exercise any control or restraint. Just let the breath breathe in, breathe out naturally. Then maintain mindfulness of the in and out breath. Then continue to relax into every mind state that arises. Then this piti, not long, will transform to become more peaceful, more quiet, more tranquil. You will experience a type of blissfulness. They call it sukhang. Sukhang is blissfulness of mind. Your mind will experience a type of bliss. Very nice feeling. Very blissful inside. Very calm and very blissful. Then continue to relax and silence everything until the mind becomes very quiet, very still. Finally, it's like no more breathing. No more breathing. Or the breath become very subtle, hardly perceptible or perceivable. If that happens, means you have good progress. you continue to relax and maintain the silent mind until the mind enters the deep. When the mind enters the deep, you will understand, you will know. Where the mind become very, very different, very mindful. The slightest movement is like magnified. Then you like to meditate because the mind state is very different. Okay, I'll just let you train your mind, until it can become quiet, peaceful. That is your meditative mind. Then for those who already know how to meditate, use that meditative mind, the silent mind, to be aware, to develop the meditation. When you can be in that state of silent awareness, you will witness a lot of things arising and passing away within your form and mind. All of the essential Dhamma, you will see them. Okay, I will set the alarm so that when the 30 minutes is up, it will ring. After it ring, I will use another bell to activate the signal for you to slowly and mindfully come out of the meditation. Okay. you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. All your action and movement, you have to be aware. Then if you can carry this mind state into your daily life to develop the stability of daily mindfulness. Okay, then we turn to page 6. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakavalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajasa sunantu sakkamokkhadam Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho vijacarana sampanno sugato lokavidu anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachyatan Veditabbo Vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Ujjupatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Samichipatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Yadidang chattari purisa yogani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savakasangho Ahuneyo, pahuneyo, dakeneyo, anjali karaniyo, anuttarang punya ketang lokasati. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Paja. Buddhang pujami. Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay. You can be seated. Yeah. We will continue from where we stopped, I think, chapter 38, the way to realize Nibbana, part 3. We are at page 552. Turn to page 552. Second paragraph. What happened to the Arahant after his passing away? So this is the topic the author discussed. So what do you think? What happened to the Arahant when he parinibbana or passed away? Anybody want to try to answer that question? Use the mic. The mic pass to Han. Oh, push it out.
No more rebirth.
Correct. No more rebirth. But the question here he asks is, what happened to the Arahant? What happened to the entity? Of course, as an Arahant, no more rebirth. But what actually happened to the Arahant? No, that form, after he parinibbana, that form is like an element, deep body. No more consciousness to make it alive anymore. So that form and mind, the segmented life is no more. Then no more rebirth means what? Means no more new form and mind existence. Then what happened to the Arahant? Of course you can say he parinibbana, he is dead, but what actually happened? Because after they have realized Arahantship, he got no more ignorance. So at the moment of death, there is no more rebirth consciousness, which means the mundane mind realizes itself through wisdom and it just ceases. Cease means what? Like the candle. When it's lighted, just now, eight of you lighted the candle. Then the flame is there. Do you realize? Then after the flame is gone, where did the flame go? It just ceases. It doesn't go anywhere. Because this flame is dependent originating condition arising. It depends on the three conditions. There must be a wick, a wax, and a light source to burn it. Then any of the conditions exists. That's why the flame is a condition arising entity. So when the condition cease, means either you blow it off, or it burn until the wick is no more, or the wax is no more, then that phenomenon ceases to be. So Arahant, in a similar way, the form and mind, the segmented form and mind, is not him. It's just like the supporting condition. But for the case of a human being, or a living being, you have the physical body as one of the conditions, with all the organs, everything functioning. Then you have the consciousness trapped inside. Then you have the life force, the karmic force, that sustain the pumping of the heart. And because of that, the human being or the living being is being animated. It's like alive, exists. But any of the conditions cease to be. So when it realizes Arahantship, that mundane mind cease, the karmic force also cease. Then what happens? When the heart does not beat, the pulse of life is no more. There will be brain dead, understand? Then whatever consciousness that is left behind cannot exist inside there. The random of consciousness will come out. But as far as the Arahant is concerned, it just is like the flame, no more. So I will read the text, see what the text say. He said, as a flame blown to and fro by the wind goes out and cannot be registered, so says the Buddha, an Arahant set free from mind and metal or form and mind has disappeared and cannot be registered. Means there is no real being. It's just a segmented form and mind. Conditions is to be then with wisdom connected to it. It no more rebirth consciousness, that's why it ceases to be, everything ceases. For him who has disappeared, states the sutta, this Nipata Sutta mentioned, there exists no form by which they could say he is. When all conditions are cut off, all metal for discussion is also cut off. Then the Udana explained the intricate point thus. As the fury spark from a forge are one by one extinguished, and no one knows where they have gone, so it is with those who have attained to complete emancipation, who have crossed the flood of desire, who have entered the calm delight of those, no trace remain. Then the Majjhika Nikaya also relates an interesting discussion between the Buddha and Vachagota concerning this very question. Vachagota is a wandering ascetic, approached the Buddha and questioned, but Gautama, where is the bhikkhu who is delivered of mind, reborn? He was of course referring to the Arahant. The Buddha replied, Vacha, to say that he is reborn would not fit the case. Then Gautama, he is not reborn. Then the Buddha answered again, Vacha, to say that he is not reborn would not fit the case. Then Gautama, he is both reborn and not reborn. Vacha, to say that he is both reborn and not reborn would not fit the case. Then Gautama, he is neither reborn nor not reborn. Vacha, to say that he is neither reborn and not reborn would not fit the case. Vacha was baffled on hearing this seemingly inconsistent answer, and in his confusion exclaimed, Gautama, I am at a loss to think in this matter, and I have become greatly confused. Enough, O Vacha, said the Buddha. Be not at a loss to think in this matter, and be not greatly confused. Profound, O Vacha, is this doctrine, recondite and difficult of comprehension, good, excellent, and not to be reached by mere reasoning. That's why you cannot use the thought or reason or the intellect. Subtle and intelligible only to the wise, and it is a hard doctrine for you to learn who belong to another sect, to another faith, to another persuasion, to another discipline, and who sit at the feet of another teacher. Therefore, O Vacha, I shall now question you, and do you make answer as may seem to you good. What think you, Vacha? Suppose a flame were to burn in front of you, would you be aware that fire was burning in front of you? Gautama, if a fire were to burn in front of me, I should be aware that a fire was burning in front of me. Then the Buddha said, but suppose, Vacha, someone were to ask you, on what does this fire that is burning in front of you depend? What would your answer be, Vacha? I would answer, O Gautama, it is the fuel of grass and wood that this fire burning in front of me depends on. But Vacha, if the flame in front of you were to become extinct, would you be aware that the fire in front of you has become extinct? Gautama, if the fire in front of me were to become extinct, I should be aware that the fire in front of me has become extinct. But Vacha, if someone were to ask you, in what direction has the fire gone? East or west? North or south? What would you say, Vacha? The question would not fit the case, Gautama. For the fire depends on fuel and grass and wood. And when the fuel has all gone, and it can get no other, being thus without nutriment, it is said to be extinct. In exactly the same way, Vacha, all form, sensation, perception, mental activity, or sankhara and consciousness have been abandoned, uprooted. Make like a palmra stump, become extinct and not liable to spring up in the future. The saint, O Vacha, who has been released from what are styled the five aggregate, is deep, immeasurable, like the mighty ocean. To say that he is reborn would not fit the case. To say that he is not reborn would not fit the case. To say that he is neither reborn or not reborn would not fit the case. One cannot say that the Arahant is reborn, as all passion that condition rebirth are eradicated. Nor can one say that the Arahant is annihilated, for there is nothing to annihilate. So this explanation which the Buddha gave to this ascetic, the Vacha, is actually quite simple, but because he is from another teacher, another religion, another belief system, that's why he finds it very difficult to comprehend. In fact, the Buddhist teaching is the only teaching, if you search around, the only teaching that has this understanding, which is very scientific and very deep in its meaning. Most teaching or most religion believe in what? An almighty God, isn't it? Yeah? True or not? And you check around, all these teaching, they may have their theory or their teaching and all those things, but I realize they don't have this term called mindfulness or awareness or sati, the true mind. The closest it can come to is some modern teaching, like Eckhart Tolle say, the power of now, awareness. So now the reference is towards awareness. But very few people understand what awareness is. What is it like to be aware? To them, to be aware is to be conscious. Like, is it aware of what? The true meaning of awareness is just aware. There is nothing to be aware. The moment you're aware of something, means you perceive already. The mundane mind arise already. There is no more awareness. There is the thought coming out already. So people cannot understand. That's why I defined to you all in the early days, what is sati or mindfulness. Mindfulness is awareness before the knowing. The moment you know, it becomes a perception. That becomes a thought. The mundane mind has a reason. In fact, to understand this anatta nature is not difficult. Like the Buddha gave the analogy of the flame. when those condition that supported its existence is no more, cease to be, then the phenomena will also cease to be, like the flame. So what is an arahant? You remember during the earlier day sharing, I used to tell you, after the form am I goes through that cessation, then you can say this form am I is an arahant or enlightened being. But this is not you, remember that. Yeah, this is a vehicle and a tool for you to come to this existential world, this universe of ours. That's why it's a karmically conditioned fire aggregate of form and mind. This one is dependent originating, condition arising, not a permanent unchanging entity. Supported by condition, it arises. When condition ceases to be, it ceases. But living being cannot understand. So what happened? They cling on to this thinking that this is real, this is me. That's how the egoic mind come about, the personality, the self-delusion. And this condition, grasping, clinging. That's how the five aggregate become grasping aggregate, upadana khandas. And because it's grasping through ignorance and self-delusion, it conditions suffering, misery. But when you understand through the meditative awakening, then you come to know that this five aggregate of form and mind is not you. All the aggregate, they are dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomenon, not a permanent and changing entity that you can cling on to, hold on to and say, this is me, this is I, and it can exist forever. No. And because of that, the enlightenment when it happens, the wisdom is connected to this five aggregate of form and mind. So you can say this one is enlightened, this one is an arahant. But this is not you, like the Buddha said. Because the five aggregate of form and mind can never be an entity that you can cling on to and hold on to. But you need this to develop the meditation, to awaken, to develop the wisdom which will be connected to this form and mind. But it is your true nature, your silent mind that can awaken to all this. So without the form and mind, there is no gateway to that true mind, true nature. You cannot meditate to develop the awakening. But because there is this form and mind, you can realize the true mind, the meditative mind. And this one can awaken. When it awakens, the wisdom is connected. That's why you can say this form and mind is enlightened. You can call it the enlightened being. If it's an arahant, it's an arahant. But it's not you. So when this so-called form and mind arahant ceases through parinibbana, where this one is not you. So when you don't exist, how can you say you are reborn, you are not reborn? Understand that? There is no atta. That's why the way the Buddha answered him sounds like very abstract. True or not? When you base on logic means what? After you die, you either are reborn or you are not reborn. True or not? It's very logical, isn't it? How can you be neither? That's why this vacha say he is very confused. But the Buddha understand that this form and mind, the arahant that you term, you say die or parinibbana, is he reborn or not reborn? Neither. Because this one is not the real arahant. This one is just a phenomenon. An impermanent phenomenon. And this one is dependent originating. So because of that, the Buddha, through his understanding, answered this ascetic in the correct manner. Where he asked, where is the Arahant reborn? He said he is not reborn. Oh, then he said, which means he is not reborn. He said, no. Then he said, he is neither born or reborn. Also no. Because these are all words, concepts. When there is no entity, all these words become no more meaning. That's why he gave the analogy or the example of a flame. Yeah? It can be a candlelight, or in that case, the two of them talk about a fire which they created through the dry grass and all those things, yeah? Or the twig and all those things. So it burned until when all the fuel is no more. Then the Buddha say the fire like cease, or he used the word extinguish. Then where did the fire go to? Did the fire take rebirth somewhere? You cannot say the fire has gone for rebirth. You cannot say the fire is not reborn. So all this got no more meaning. That's why it's not really difficult to develop the understanding. But if you have not gone through that cessation, it's very difficult for living being to comprehend. That's why the Buddha started by telling him it's even more difficult for Vacha. He is from another teaching, another teacher, with another understanding of the world. So that is the reason why. So what the Buddha gave as a analogy to this Vacha is very good. Yeah? So hopefully with that, you can understand. Then he quote this author, Robert Oppenheimer, a scientist, writes, if we ask, for instance, whether the position of the electron remains the same, we must say no. If we ask whether the electron's position changes with time, we must say no. If we ask whether it is in motion, we must say no. So the scientists also have this. How many of you are not science students? Wow, so many not science students. Then not easy for you to understand. For those who study science, especially if you study until Form 6, Form 5 also you may not study it. There is this theory of uncertainty. Principle of uncertainty. How many of you have heard of this? Oh, you haven't. Then, what is light? Is light a particle or a wave? This one all Form 6 on physics. The scientists come to know within nature, very strange. Certain time, light is particle. Certain time, light is wave. They have this what they call theory or principle of uncertainty. Means, whatever object, if you want to know its position, there is another entity, I forgot already. One is position, the other one is what? I cannot remember, too long. Means you cannot at the same time can get these two together. These two is either or one. Yeah. When you try to locate it, I cannot remember. They call it the principle of uncertainty. You cannot be certain about their position. I think speed. The other one is speed, if I'm not wrong. Position and their speed. If these two can cause that particle to become wave and all those things. At different speed, it become different. So the position and the speed, they vary. And when you are accurate with the speed, you are not accurate with the position, something like that. So this is within the scientific field. The scientists also know. That's why he talked about this electron. Electrons are very small particles. In the early days, when we study science, they thought atom is the smallest individual particle. Then as science progresses with the electron microscope, all those things, they were able to see within the atom, there is a lot of things. You got a nucleus, you got an electron circulating around the nucleus. Then within the nucleus, there is also this proton. Then when you subject the atom to heat and certain type of reaction, it can emit the very fine wave particles, meson and all those very small energy. So the scientists have started to discover all these things. So when it comes to all this very, very micro type of entity, they got this special physics that talk about this microwave and micro energy. They call it quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics. So all this is what nature's marvel is all about. That's why nature is not easy to understand, not easy to comprehend. But that time when I was studying them in 1973 and 74, I find it very interesting, and I understand that subject very well, physics. But after so many years, a lot of things no longer familiar because these are very complicated teaching. Unless you have the interest, you won't go into it. But that time, I naturally have the interest, very funny. I like the science subjects, physics, chemistry and biology. But I like most is chemistry and physics. Anyway, we read on. The Buddha has given such answer when interrogated as to the condition of man's self after death. But they are not familiar answers from the tradition of the 17th and 18th century science. Nibbana, it may safely be concluded, is obtained by the complete cessation of the defilement, kilesa. But the real nature of this supreme state means this aspect of the Dhamma, Nibbana, cannot be expressed in word. This is true, correct? Because the absence of defilement only shows what? No more ignorance, no more avijja. That's why the wisdom bring about the enlightenment. Means when the wisdom awakens the mind and you realize the truth, then of course when you realize the truth, you also realize your true nature. And your true nature is the unconditioned. That's why you cannot explain, you cannot use word, you cannot describe it, because it's the unconditioned. So the aspect of like the last Sunday talk, very good. The recording is also very good. You must go and view the video and listen to it attentively until the end. The Q&A, the last two questions, very good. Then it so happened when I was delivering the talk there, I met a very old friend, my senior in university, MU. He was, I think, 3 or 4 years my senior. His name, if I'm not wrong, is the same name as that previous Taiwan, you call it what? President or Prime Minister? Lee Teng Hui. His name is Lee Teng Hui. You know? So I saw him that Sunday before the talk. Then I straight away can remember him. You know? Hey, I say, you are here. Then he also remember me. We haven't met for very long, since the Vasti day. I think easily 40 years ago. Or 40 over years ago. 1975. That was the year I met him. 75, 76, I think. Because it was 75/76, my first year. Whereas we joined in May, then we end our first year February. Then after the holiday, next year May start again. So every year of our study is 2 year one, 75/76, first year. Then 76/77, second year. So when I was in my first year engineering, he was final year. He did mechanical engineering. So he also part of the Buddhist Society, BJF. I think he is not the president. The president was another guy. He was the secretary. So that day after the talk, he actually took a group of us, Kayamita, who followed me, for lunch. He said he wanted to buy me lunch, so we were there. So end of the day, Jim, Ingby and him gave us a very good lunch. Then he sat beside me, you know, and we talked. We discussed a lot of things. That lunch, and now almost 2 hours, I think 2 hours or 2 hours plus. Almost 3 hours. We left at 11:45, you know, from the temple. We reached them about 12 o'clock. We finished, I have to cut short everything at 2:30, I remember, 2 hours. And he asked a lot of very good questions, you know, about the Mahayana teaching, then the Theravada teaching. And he is very knowledgeable. He got a lot of knowledge. He quote the monk, he quote the text and all those things. Then he asked me, towards the end, he asked me this question. I forgot the first item. He said there were 3 words, I think, mentioned in the Mahayana Sutta. The first one I forgot already. Maybe you all can help recall. The second one is Vijja. You know what is Vijja or not? No. He mentioned the Pali word Vijja and Panya. Before Vijja, there is another word. He asked me, what is the difference of these three? Well, to him, he thought they are the same. Vijja, you know what is Vijja or not? Avijja, you know, yeah. Avijja is ignorant, yeah. So Vijja is no more ignorant, yeah. So to him, Vijja, no more ignorant means his wisdom. Do you understand his logic? That's why he cannot differentiate. I said, no, the two are different. Vijja is without ignorance, correct? But how does Vijja come about? It's because you meditate. Your insight into phenomena, you awaken through what? Through wisdom. Wisdom is panya, understand not? So with panya, you become vijja, understand not? The two are different. He thought it's the same. Yeah. So this discussion is the same, understand not? Just now we were discussing, what was it? Nibbana. This kilesa no more. You understand? Yeah. So it's something similar. Vijja and Panya, they are different. So Nibbana is not Kilesa no more. Understand? No? Or you can say Nibbana is enlightenment, cessation. These are all words. But the actual realization of Nibbana is very strange. There is nobody to realize Nibbana. You understand? And Nibbana is not a mind state. You cannot attain Nibbana. Nibbana is the unconditioned. So that's why all these are words, I told him. But the words come from what? Come from the understanding that people have. If you awaken through wisdom, then that wisdom can understand what this thing is. Otherwise, cannot. If you use knowledge, you'll become more confused. That's why you can use word to describe what Nibbana is, but it's all not Nibbana. It's the unconditioned. Beyond word, beyond thought, beyond description. None of this can describe what that thing is. That's why they always use the negation. Negation means Nibbana, whatever that is not Nibbana. Where they dare not touch Nibbana. The moment you speak about it, just like the Tao. Tao ke Tao, Fei Chang Tao. Whatever that can be spoken or described or interpreted, that is not the true Tao. But nothing is apart from the Tao. That's why it's very, very difficult to comprehend. Because these are wisdom. Wisdom is the unconditioned understanding. Of course, there are two types of wisdom. Wisdom within the existential world, which is the Dhamma. Wisdom. The other one is the unconditioned. Wisdom within the unconditioned, which is also Dhamma. So these two, they are different. So under this aspect of the description, the author is quite correct in saying that Nibbana, it may safely be concluded, is obtained by the complete cessation of ignorance or defilement. Then he qualified it. But the real nature of this supreme state, which is the Nibbanic Dhamma, cannot be expressed in word. This one is correct. This is what I tried to explain just now. So as far as the words are concerned, sometimes you may not have the understanding, because if you have not gone through the realization, the words like very confusing, very difficult to develop the understanding. But if you have gone through the awakening, you have realized the understanding, the wisdom leading to it, then you know what the thing is. And you can use some form of words to express it, to communicate the meaning. Then I read on. From a metaphysical standpoint, Nibbana is complete deliverance from suffering. Again, it's not describing Nibbana. It's telling you what Nibbana is not. Means no more suffering, no more kilesa, no more ignorance. All is no more, no more. But what is it? He cannot explain. You can say Nibbana is the unconditioned. All these are the negation. From a psychological standpoint, Nibbana is the eradication of egoism. See? Again, the negation. From an ethical standpoint, Nibbana is the destruction of greed, hatred, and delusion. So these are all negation. Oh, finish, Oh, very fast. So now chapter 39. Do you have any question? Any question? How many of you have listened to the last Sunday talk? Oh, very good. Quite a number attended also. You must listen to it. Because it's very good topic. It actually explains very clearly the Buddha's teaching. And the Buddha himself emphasized the importance of these three turning under Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Because when he delivered this sutta, he said, these three turning are the four noble truths. Because there are four noble truths. Turn it three times. Four times three, you have the 12 modes. He said he himself, as a bodhisattva at that time, he has to understand the four noble truths in his three turning or 12 modes before he can proclaim to be the supreme enlightened one. See? The Buddha himself also have to go through that. So our parami, how can we match the Buddha? So you better go through that. And this is how he actually formulated the teaching. These three turning correspond to the three types of wisdom. Suttamayapanya, Chintamayapanya, and Bhavanamayapanya. So the three types of wisdom correspond to the three type of the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. And this three turning is so beautifully established and taught by the Buddha. And it relates to all his other essential Dhamma teaching. He has the other teaching is called the three phases of Dhamma, Pariyatti, Patipatti and Pativeda. So Pariyatti is the learning of the teaching. Then after that you put it into cultivation or practice, Patipatti. Then phase three is you get to reap the fruition of your hard work. Means you get to live the third phase of Dhamma, which is after you have realized the enlightenment. So you get to live the life of enlightenment, free of suffering. There is only understanding, wisdom, and the mind is beautiful. The mind is always heedful, mindful, tranquil, peaceful, full of joy, understanding. No more of the agitated, heedless thinking mind that is full of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, all the negativity of mind state. So the heedless living is completely different. The phase three, or the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda, is the most beautiful part of the human life. You can get to realize that phase. There is a lot of joy. Then life becomes beautiful, wonderful, meaningful. Then you can get to really live life to the fullest. You can get to experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. Then your life take a turn. Your understanding of life all different. That's why when you understand the Dhamma, you understand life. Then you get to live the noble life of an enlightened being. Then life become meaningful. Life become beautiful. And wonderful. Fantastic. So there is such thing as life. Even though everything is like not so real. Anatta. Empty. But there is such thing as life, existence. That's why the five degrees of form and mind before Iparinibbana, with the wisdom connected and the understanding, is very beautiful. It really, really can give you the good life, and you can really live life to the fullest. That's why life is not what people think. Life is suffering. Life is misery, affliction, problematic and all. No. It's because you lack wisdom, you lack the understanding of the Dhamma. That's why Dhamma is very useful, very beautiful. Then he teaches you how to cultivate them. The three turning is not easy. You have to go into it one by one. First turning is proclamation of the teaching, the truth. It's like the Buddha proclaimed the sutta, the discourse that he has taught, means the teaching. When he proclaimed, at that time you can only listen. That's why sutamaya panya is wisdom. Panya is wisdom, born of hearing the sutta. That's why, just how Padmasri mentioned what? Hearing. The first one is what? You say faith and what? Oh, then different. There is the other one, the Mahayana, got the three type of wisdom. Hearing, then the other one is reflection, contemplation, and inquiry. Sanhui, but they got their own words for it. I remember the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, Xianhua got mentioned. It mesh, that one mesh. The three type of wisdom mesh with Theravada one. Except they describe it differently, but they mesh. The cultivation, when you develop the understanding, is very easy. But if you have not developed the true understanding, you can really have a tough time understanding it. Because you can never cultivate something that you don't understand. True or not? When you don't understand, how can you develop the understanding? You cannot put it into practice or cultivate. Everything also need understanding. Like play chess, play badminton. First thing you must know is what? The rules of the game, isn't it? Then after that you have to train, isn't it? Until very skillful, isn't it? Then you have to challenge people, isn't it? Before you can become very well versed in it or very skillful. So meditation is the same. Learning the teaching is the same, the Dhamma. If you learn, you never put into practice. It's just like somebody who learned cooking. You can learn it from the cookbook. What you call that? Recipe. But if you never try to cook, what happened? You are not a chef at all, understand? You still can't cook. You may have a lot of theory. Like swimming, you can have a lot of theory, butterfly, freestyle, backstroke, everything. But you never go into the pool. How to float also you don't know. The natural state of the body is buoyancy also you don't know. So all these are the things you need to understand. So when you understand that the natural state of the physical body is buoyancy, because it's lighter than water, then swimming become very easy, understand? You walk into the pool or you jump into the pool, you don't have to worry about yourself sinking, understand? Or drowning, because you are lighter than water. What must you do? Relax. Don't do anything. The buoyancy force will push you up. You understand? Actually, in a similar way, meditation is the same. Your true mind is the meditative mind. Means your natural state of, like the body, the natural state of body is buoyancy. But you don't know. You don't believe. Yeah? Every step you take, you keep on going down. Understand? And you go down first before the buoyancy force push you up. That's why you have fear. You dare not trust. Unless you know how to swim, unless you really go in. That's why meditation is about going in to do the practice, the training. Then only you understand what that thing is. Otherwise you will never do it. So when you understand the natural state of mind is already the meditative state, then why must you go and create thought and disrupt the whole meditative mind? It's just like you go through the pool of water, stir it, it becomes dirty, contaminated. But you don't do anything, let it settle down. Then when the thought is no more, your true mind arises. That's why meditation is about relax, aware, finish. Then the natural state of mind will return. Then you are in the meditative state. You will experience all the stillness, the tranquility, the calm. That's why the silent mind is your true mind. That is why Hui Ning teach. Take you direct to the silent mind. That's why his first hallmark is what? No thought. You must know how to realize no thought. By not doing anything, the original state of mind will come back. That is what no thought is all about. Then you just realize it. That's how you can become enlightened, awakened to your true nature. Yeah. So that talk that I delivered was very good. You should listen to it, then follow the format to cultivate. And I even give the example of the Avijja Sutta, the 10 steps to mesh up with those things. So Pariyatti, the learning of the teaching, is actually the first and second turning wisdom. You learn through what? During the olden days, you have to listen to the sutta. But now, we are more fortunate. You have the printed media. You can Google. You can have the text. Or the book. Then you can read them slowly. You can even highlight, mark them. Then you can listen to the audio file. You don't have to be there every time the Buddha speaks or when the speaker speaks. But the danger of all this technology is what you Google and receive, they may not be the true teaching. That is where, like I explained just now, you cannot have the cake and eat it. You can have modern technology advantage, but the disadvantage is all sorts of rubbish also inside there. So you must learn how to filter and screen them. So during the Buddha's time, you have to listen to him. But the good point is what? If you get to listen, it's the authentic one. Understand? Because it's the Buddha speaking, delivering the sutta proclamation. So that is the advantage. But that advantage, you have to be born during the Sakyamuni Buddha's arising. And you have to be that particular region, no? That part of India. Otherwise, that time, no aeroplane, no this type of ship, everything. So how to go there? There is no social media to tell you, no newspaper, nothing. So if you look back, the condition there is really not easy. But they are protected through what? If you can be there, the teaching is authentic. Understand? There's like so many enlightened beings at that time. But now, after 2001 years, we have the technology, everything. We got the benefit of this modern IT thing. We can record, we can video like now, which you now do. Do you realize the video when you listen is so different from listening to the audio file? Do you find it that way? I find it that way, understand? Yeah, I realize people listen to audio file, they cannot follow. They may even fall asleep. Because a lot of Kayamita give me the feedback. But nowadays, you cover one talk, the whole range of topic is so wide, you know, that you all took so many years to learn, you know, and one shot into that 1 hour plus talk or sharing. So it's not easy for them to follow, really not easy. And if without the video, worse. You don't even know what I was trying to explain or share. The whiteboard writing all not there. So it's not easy to follow. Even with the video, you are there to listen. If you are not a cultivator, you don't have your past parami, it's not easy for them to follow. Even that friend I told you, Li Tinghui, I heard from Jim, He's a Dhamma speaker, you know, and he is very good in his Dhamma. But a lot of them are knowledge. That's why he finally talked to me. He asked a lot of questions, which is very good. And I think he has the parami. He has the affinity. After so long, 40 years, suddenly we meet there. And he know how to request and check with me whether I'm free for lunch or not. I say, yeah, but I got some following me. He said, no problem, all come. So we have 12 of us there. And Tammy, who left earlier, finally end up also that restaurant, so we get her together. That's why whatever will be, will be. You meant to be there, you will be there. You are not meant to be there, you will not be there. Because when we went there, I think initially it was about 13 of us. Then because that shop was not open, that vegetarian shop, so they decided to change to another shop, which is organic shop. So while the rest of us went, then when I tried to contact Pang and Angie, I think they are constrained by time and all those things. So they say, now my brother, you all go ahead. Then they say they will eat somewhere else. That's why meant to be will be, not meant to be will not be. So the condition will arise. So what I foresee through this video recording is you can attentively listen because you can follow. And you will not be sleepy, because if you really have the interest in learning this beautiful teaching, you will be very attentive. Yeah. What was shared was very profound. You have to listen to it again and again, and different depth of meaning will appear. But as you understand, you listen again, it's different again. It's just like the first turning and the second turning. After you listen for the first time, if you don't have the past parami, if you are not a cultivator, you may only get 5% or 10% on what I share. The rest is like greed to you. With a lot of the teaching, you are not familiar. Like Brother Song told me, and Jin Hao Dei also told me. Then after that, if you were to listen again, then you develop the second turning. You inquire, you reflect, you contemplate. Then this understanding will stabilize. Then you receive more stable understanding and wisdom. Then the third time you listen again, go back to the same video, again the meaning is different. Because last time you cannot understand what, now you start to understand. You follow. Then there is joy. Then you realize within the talk, so much teaching inside there, so much Dhamma inside there, so much thing to understand and cultivate. This is what you have to do. But during the early day when I started, I keep on repeating the tape that I record. Last time, no CD, no video and all those things. We only got tape. Cassette tape. That cassette tape, listen until worn out. That's why every time good one, I will dub an extra copy. Because sometimes that one, the original one, halfway through, it may get itself entangled in the cassette recorder, or sometimes it will just break. Because the pulley, because of wear and tear and friction, so the friction become more and more. Then sometimes the cassette like slow down. Slow down. Because the rotor that turned it already wear and tear and having problem, friction and all those things. Then sometimes for no reason, it get itself entangled into that metal piece. And then open up, cannot salvage already. Then sometimes it break, tinge. So these are the thing that I did during the early day. I keep on listening. You ask my wife. Every time in the car, I will listen. Especially when I drive home from P PJ to other stuff. Sometimes it takes 8 hours during the early day before the Noxa highway. Then sometimes it takes about 12 hours with traffic jam. But after the Noxa highway, 5 to 6 hours, not so bad. Fastest is 4 hours, but that one you sacrifice your lunch. You will drive all the way straight. PG used to drive back to Penang. Mine another 60 miles, 100 kilo to Alastair. So during that time, I listen. Even Xuanhua's tape recording, I listen. Yeah, every time I listen, the understanding goes in deeper and deeper. Then when I reflect, I contemplate, the things stabilize. That's how I come to know about the first turning, second turning wisdom. Then the meditative part. So a lot of these things, if you don't really, like Avijja Sutta, step 2, listen, constantly listening to the Dhamma. Oh, today I sent out the short notes. Mind you, I go and do the short note. No? Surprise or not? The Sunday talk. Yeah. Oh, I didn't send out. I sent email to you all, but I didn't send out to the Michael Amita. Now I send for you, so that you can have it. It is not bad. In fact, not easy, you know, even for Manuel like that also. The description, not that accurate. A lot of things I need to adjust, but I don't really mind because she really put in the effort to help Kayamita to develop the understanding. Okay, I will send over now, so that you all can go back and read. Okay, SJBA. Outline short notes. Should be PDF or Word file. Word, eh? Ah, okay. I sign over now. Ah, okay. Forward already. You already see? You can go back and go through it. It's quite good. Not complete, but quite good. Because there are too many things there, and Manyan try her best. Because she sometimes use her own word, the meaning of run. So I need to edit a lot of, do a lot of editing, but it doesn't come out. You should listen to the what they call recording. The video recording is very good. Don't go and use your own word. You follow what I say. Then the meaning very clear. When she use her own word, I realize a lot of things run. Maybe because she cannot comprehend what the meaning was. Because I realize those who did the outline channel, when you try to use your own word, those who are good in English and can understand one is very good. Like my daughter, good in English and he understands the Dhamma. Oh, the language come out very good. That's why very easy for me to edit. But those who don't really understand the Dhamma one, when you use your own word, the whole thing gone. So for those who don't really have the strong understanding of the Dhamma, my advice is listen and follow what I say. Then easy for me to do the editing and all those things. Okay. It's almost 2 over pages, I think. Nearly 3 pages. Okay, we go to the next chapter. Oh, this one is interesting. Chapter 39, the state of an arahant. Just now we say the unconditioned cannot describe. Now he want to describe the state of an arahant. If I'm not wrong, I think all is negation. Okay, the state of an arahant. This one is from the Dhammapada verse. This one is very good. Though little he recites the sacred text. See? Like that day that friend, the Li Tinghui, he said, you must read the sutta, you must know all this. Then I asked him, you know six patriarch platform sutta, yeah? Hui Ning is an illiterate, no? He doesn't even recognize the word, no? How to read the sutta. And yet he just awakened, no? Then, no? That's why the Buddha say the same thing. We read through your sense. Though little he recite the sacred text, but act in accordance with the teaching, forsaking greed, hatred, and delusion or ignorance, truly knowing with mind well free, clinging to naught here and hereafter, he shares the fruits of the holy life. Means enlightened. Being fruit of the holy life. Our durian is your fruit. So you are going to have fruit chain soon. So today a lot of fruit outside. Not only for one. Yun Chan, Raymond, we must thank them. Where is Yun Chan? Oh yeah, she is there. Thank you for the durian. Tell Raymond, sadhu to him. The Tipitaka abound with interesting and self-elevated saying that describe the peaceful and happy state of an arahant who abides in the world till the end of his life, serving others, seekers of truth, by example and by precept. This one is very true. So this one, the state of an arahant, I think he is referring to the one still alive. Understand? The ones that still have the five aggregate of form and mind means they are living the third phase of Dhamma. You understand? Pativeda. This one is interesting if they are talking about that. So in the Dhammapada, the Buddha states, for him who has completed the journey, for him who is sorrowless, for him who from everything is wholly free, for him who has destroyed all ties, the fever of passion exists not. So if you want to understand more, you look at the note 1, note 2, note 3. So they are all described down there until note 5. So note 1 is the journey, of life is the round of existence. Means samsara. That is an arahant. Then note 2. One who gives up sorrow by attaining anagami, the third stage of sainthood. It is at this stage one eradicates completely attachment to sensual desire and ill will or aversion. So this is for note 2. Sorrowless. Then note 3, sabadhi, the five aggregate. Oh, okay. For him who from everything is wholly free. Means from the grasping to the five aggregate. Number 4 is the four kind of gantas. Namely, covetousness, ill will, indulgence, rites and ritual, and adherence to one's preconception as truth. Then number 5, the verse refer to the ethical state of an arahant. Heat is both physical and mental. An arahant experiences bodily heat as long as he is alive, but is not thereby worried. Mental heat of passion he experienced not. This one is the author's view. because the five aggregate is still the five aggregate. You understand? What is the difference between the arahant and normal people? Yeah? The five aggregate is the same, except there is transformation that leads to the wisdom, the understanding, the awakening, and this wisdom connected to the form and mind. That is the only difference. And because it's connected, the wisdom is the one that free the mind and make it have the ability to be an arahant. Yeah. Sorrowless, no more suffering at all, no more delusion, no more ignorance, no more rebirth. So all this come from the wisdom. Mm. But there are also transformation happening. Your heart area, your consciousness, your brain, everything transform. Yeah. In fact, your whole physical human, the physical body also undergo a lot of transformation. Very difficult to explain to people, because when you connect to your gateway, your true nature, that pure energy, yeah, that goes through, after when you do develop the meditation, after you have developed the ability to connect to your true mind, your true nature, then that stage of meditation is different from your normal meditation. That one, a lot of transformation. Initially is to your physical. Then this physical, when it's transformed, the pure energy will make your vibration very, very fine. And this very fine vibration inside your mind, the consciousness, will cause your mundane mind to collapse. Then before your mundane mind collapse, your brain, there also a lot of things happen. Your brain become very different. I also don't know how to explain to you. This brain become very different. The mind inside there is like no mind inside there at all. Well, after the mundane mind collapse, it's just the pure nature shine forth, the awareness inside there. And that supramundane mind is so fine, like no mind inside there. And the whole thing is like empty, clear. Empty, yet the understanding is there. And that clarity is never seen before. We are not obscured by anything anymore. The whole lot of mundane mind collapse. Because it is too gross to withstand the fine vibration and all those things. So all this they don't know. It's not described in the text. And they themselves haven't gone through it, haven't realized it. That's why they cannot write all those things. They can only write the normal thing. Okay, we read on. The mindful exert themselves to know about are they attached, like swan that quit their pools. Home after home, they abandon and go. So these are all the descriptions. They for whom there is no accumulation, who reflect well over their food, who have deliverance, which is void and signless as their object, their cause, like that of the bird in the air, cannot be traced. He whose corruption are destroyed, he who is not attached to food, he who has deliverance which is void and signless, as his object, his path, like that of the bird in air, cannot be traced. Oh, these are the Dhammapada verse 92 and 93. Oh, from 91 it starts. 90? Oh yeah, the earlier one is 90, yeah. No, so they just quote the Dhammapada verse. Then you look at the notes. Arahants wander whithersoever they like without any attachment to any particular place, as they are free from the concept of I and my. So this one is quite interesting. Do you think the arahant wander whithersoever? They like without any attachment to any particular place, as they are free from the concept. This one, no comment. Because a lot of people, before they have that realization, they try to describe how the enlightened being must live their life or how they behave. These are all speculation, because different type of enlightened being, they have different preference, different understanding. But one thing is, they don't have really any delusion anymore. Means they still have certain thing that they like in life, understand? Not? But they are not attached. Means if there is no condition, no problem. But if there is condition, they don't mind. And they understand. It's just like good food. Good food. A lot of people have this wrong idea. They will have this false understanding. Just they have this very deeply ingrained. Because to them, after you enlighten, the being become enlightened, you got no more craving. True or not? Huh? The word is correct. No more craving. Do you know what they interpret craving as? Means good food cannot eat, no. Understand not? Nice thing cannot buy, no. It's craving. You agree or not? So they try to live like enlightened being, no. They not eat good food. But when people not around, I don't know. That is not what the Buddha teach, Anasana. You think during the time of the Buddha, when he was invited by the king or those things, they serve him normal street food. They serve him the best food, understand? These wealthy people, like Ananda Pindika and all those things. And he partake and receive all this food, and he take, but he don't overeat, he don't indulge, understand? When there is condition, he will have them, and he rejoice. But these are the understanding. There's nothing wrong with good food or not good food. Condition like that, things we learn that. So if there is condition to have good food, why not? If you dare not eat, you pass to me, I eat. As long as you have the understanding, there is no craving or desire. If no condition to have also you want, then there is craving. There is really, really craving, desire. So a lot of these things people cannot understand. Then sometimes because the body need, understand not? Not you need, the body need. So the body need, it will know how to go and search for food. And sometimes for no reason, that food that he doesn't like to eat, but because the body need, he will go and get that food and eat it. Because it understands the body. A lot of these things, if you have not gone through it, you cannot understand. So this aspect is definitely not in the text, but as you go through the cultivation, you will develop your own understanding. Okay, we go on. Note number two. There are two kinds of accumulation, namely karmic activity and the four necessity of life. The former tend to prolong life in samsara, and the latter, though essential, may prove an obstacle to spiritual progress. This one is the author. They must have got it from somewhere, I don't know. But not important. Because as far as karmic activity, you must understand, even after you become enlightened, arahant, there is still karmic. Understand? The form of mind still subject to karma, but there is no more negative karma. You understand? That's why your karmic nature become one after that. What happened to your karmic nature? All the way up, isn't it? Because you are incapable of negativity or karma. Do you understand? That's why when you go the bodhisattva way, you become very different. because of that condition, the cultivation. When you try the Bodhisattva way, after you have the understanding and the stability of the cultivation, especially after you have gone beyond the first and second stage of Bodhi-mind development, yeah, you become very different. Very, very different. Yeah. Then, when you reach the third stage of Bodhi-mind development, you will never fall back anymore. They're all the way up. Then that time, yeah, your Bodhisattva way will be very beautiful. Every life you come, you become very beautiful. You will definitely get to live the third phase of Dhamma beautifully. And you will connect early. Because your nature will know. Oh, you will connect very early. Even Huineng also, he connected quite early. In the chapter lesson 84, the book is going to come out soon. Now I have to go to the final proofreading. Then after that, if it's okay, I think we will get it printed by next month. Just in time for our 15th anniversary of our gathering of Kayamita on the 6th of October. Then the other book, The Cultivation of the Bodhisattva Way, I think lesson 10. I finished already. Now I have to go through the final check. So fast, 10:30 already. Oh, we stop here. Maybe I just finish off the notes. See? Number 3, the note, to get rid of the desire for food. This is what I try to explain to you. A lot of people think craving no more, because they say Arahant no more craving. Because craving is the cause of suffering. Craving is the cause of suffering. That craving is different. Understand now? That one is Kama Tangha, Bhava Tangha, and Vibhava Tangha. That one is attachment. But when there is no attachment, that is not craving. So if you have the condition, then you understand, then it manifests, then it's not a desire. But it is something that the enlightened being would like to eat, because they have their own preference, behavior, and certain aspect of food. That's why you come from certain tradition, your food is different. If you come from certain type of race, your food is different again. So all this, he said, get rid of the desire for food. Luckily he added in the word desire. He never say you cannot take good food or nice food. Then number 4, Nibbana is deliverance from suffering. This is a negation again. It is called void because it is void of lust, hatred and delusion. Not because it is nothingness or annihilation. Nibbana is a positive supramundane state which cannot be expressed in the mundane word. It's not a state, it's not a mind state, because it's unconditioned. It is signless because it is free from the sign of lust, etc. Arahant experienced nibbanic bliss while alive. It is not correct to say that Arahant exists after death or do not exist after death. For Nibbana is neither externalism or nihilism. In Nibbana, nothing is eternalized, nor is anything except passion annihilated. Arahant experienced Nibbanic bliss by attaining to the fruit of Arahantship in this life itself. Okay, we end here. 560. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits. Then after that, we end. So today you can have your durian, huh? After we need to seek the help of a few kayamita, help us to open durian. Okay, let us do the sharing of merits. Akasata ca bumata dewa naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakan tuloka sasana ita wata camehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe dewa anumodantu sabba sampati sidya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teo devo asatukalena sasa sampati hetu ca vito bhavatu loko ca raja bhavatu dhammiko imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect to Triple Jam, then we end.